If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Riddle me that. The rest of y'all know where I'm lurking. Yeah. Can none of y'all mirror me back? Yeah, hear me rap. It's like Angie rapping his prime.
Welcome back to another episode of Miami Nice. Two in a row, baby. We're just hitting them. My name's Katie Walsh, obviously. Sitting next to me in the Go Fast boat. We're going to Cuba, get a drink. It's Blake Howard.
Oh, it's just that. That mojito is just in my mustache right now. I can taste it, Katie.
It's the salty air and the mojito, just the essence. It's a musk. Sweat. God knows what Colin Farrell smelled like on that set.
I would buy it. I'm telling you right now. Yeah. I'd buy it. I'd wear it. It'd be my scent.
Yes. We have a lovely guest today. You know her. I know you know her. You've seen her online. You've seen her asking people for favorites, last four watched, interviewing various filmmakers like Michael Mann.
Yeah.
She is one of my favorite friends here in LA, one of my little birds under my wing. No one I'd rather run into at an Oscar after party than the lovely Mia Vicino from Letterboxd.
Oh. Hello. Hello. Thank you for having me, Miami Nice. It's an honor to be here.
Well, we had to have you after you gave us an incredible shout out in your Michael Mann interview, which just went up a week or so ago on the Letterboxd YouTube channel. 50 whole minutes with Michael Mann talking about his favorite movies. I mean, that's a dream.
It was a dream, and we actually shot for 2 hours and 20 minutes, and
oh my God,
he was very, very generous and gracious with his time, and then we shrunk it down to a clean 51 minute cut. But yeah, it was incredible. I had never felt as much like a true journalist as sitting there for over two hours with Michael Mann, kind of fighting for my life, but in a good way.
I think anyone would be in that scenario.
Oh yeah. I was just going to say, Mia, so many people on every app text me your great work, like just going, guys, like I had it on Instagram. I had it in our Discord. I had it in like text and had it in Katie texted me in WhatsApp. So it was a crazy thing and it was so great. And of course we have to just say thank you so much for the gorgeous shout out in the middle. It was so great. Not only was that, you know, the whole interview was a highlight, because I think we and other Michael Mann acolytes have like obsessed over what his influences are. And it's like actually a true, like, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, you see your favorite filmmakers do an interview and it sort of feels like they're treading over familiar ground. But there were so many great, awesome bombshells, if you like, for us as we're watching, like, oh, that filmmaker and that particular actor or that particular style, or, you know, there were some great Manhunter tidbits, which I was really enjoying. And yeah, just really excellent. So thank you so much for that beautiful shout out. It was so lovely.
Aw, y'all, I felt I had to do it for the culture, because you have done so much for Miami Vice appreciation. And I, you know, as we all know, when it came out, it was not super celebrated. So I thought it was important to be like, Michael Mann, no, listen, you might already yes. know this, but like, people love this movie. Yes. I needed him to know.
And you shouted out our screening, which was great, because you said, oh, I saw it last year in a room, in a sold out theater, a room full of people. So I thought that was great as well, because, you know, that was like how not everyone has seen the movie that way and reappreciated it that way. But it was at our Miami Nice Presents Miami Vice screening with American Cinematheque last year that you went and saw it. And we are doing it again, obviously, if you have.
Yeah.
Heard our last episode, and Blake will be there in person this time. So
I won't just be a disembodied gigantic head on a screen. Yes.
That was my first introduction to Blake. It's true, when I was at that screening. And also, I just want to say that was the perfect way to watch it for the first time as well. It was the theatrical cut, of course.
Yes.
And I thank you for that. Thank you for that screening. I'm so happy that was the way that I watched it.
Yes.
And speaking of Letterboxd, I was in Australia. It was the middle of the day and we did that introduction, and it was the greatest high to like see Katie and sort of just barely hear the tittering of people, and people took photos and things like that. And then it was so awesome, like 2 hours later, to see just what your friends are watching was the Miami Vice poster on Letterboxd. It just was unbelievable. Like it just filled my screen. I was like, this is what life should be like, where I look at Letterboxd, where I look down and every one of my favorite lunatics is watching Miami Vice together. It was great.
Nothing better than going onto Letterboxd and the whole line is all the same movie poster. I was like, this is great.
And it's going to happen again when you screen at the Egyptian, by the way, upgrade.
Yes. I'm like just so excited to see that theatrical cut opening at the Egyptian.
Oh my God. Yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
The crowd's going to look like the meme, you know, that sports bar where everyone loses their mind and throws the drinks. Yeah, that's that. Someone should just, with a night vision camera, just
maybe I should like sneak off to the side for the opening.
Might have to stand
in the back. Anyway, but so that was the first time you had seen the film. And like, I mean, at this point, you know, you'd probably heard a lot about it, but what were your first impressions of Miami Vice when you saw it?
My first impression was Colin Farrell, Colin Farrell, Colin Farrell. That was, to be honest, it was a thirst watch. I was there for him. I had not really fully started my Michael Mann journey yet. I believe I'd only seen Thief and Heat. Which great films. So, but I was there through a Colin lens, and my first impression was, of course, everything with Colin and Gong Li. Like that's what was seared into my brain afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I think that is pretty normal.
I was just gonna say,
I think it's normal.
You're not alone. And even for the people who watch it 50 times, that's where everyone's. That's where you observe things like, you're just like, look at the leg maneuver on that. You know, you just, the leg maneuver is something we observed in a live screening, and all of the people watching along with us, I think, had a grade A meltdown. They all needed to go cool off. But no, it's a thirst watch for sure. It's
in a major way.
Yeah, it's great.
I don't think I fully realized like how romantic it would be. Like I went into it thinking, you know, it's just gonna be like shooting, drug busts, lots of loads. I do want to say I was really noticing how many times they said load this watch.
Yeah. That's why we had to cancel the drinking game, because we were like, oh, drink every time they say loads. Ha ha ha. And then 15 minutes into the movie, I said, no, stop it right now. It's not allowed. Okay.
I was watching it with some friends. We were drinking wine and we were like, oh, we should drink every time they say load. Like that, the same thing happened to us. And we were like, we actually can't do this.
Yeah.
There's not enough wine.
No, we'll run out. you realize that it becomes it is romantic. I do think also that comes through on the rewatches more and more. Like that's the thing that you're just like more focusing on every single time, every single rewatch. But you just watched the director's cut. So what were your impressions of the director's cut?
My truth is I think I prefer the boat race opening.
Okay.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. I was looking online and a lot of people prefer being dropped into numb/encore, which I understand. I totally get that. Because it is thrilling. But I really like the setup with the boats. I think it foreshadows all the amazing boat work we get to see. And I also just really love that specific like indigo blue shade of the credits. And we get to see those with the director's cut boat opening.
Yes.
So that's my little dorky credit appreciation. But and then I also I thought it was very funny how the climactic scene has that In the Air Tonight cover in the director's cut.
Yes. Another one of the egregious changes. Yes.
Yes.
It changes the mood so much. Yes, yes. Like after watching the director's cut, I made my friends. I was like, okay, just so you guys know, there are some changes. Now we're gonna pull up the theatrical cut on Netflix, and we're gonna watch that beginning, and we're gonna watch the climactic scene, but without the In the Air Tonight cover. So I did make sure. Oh, to explain, I watched it with a bunch of friends who had never seen any cut of Miami Vice, and I did make them watch the director's cut first. And I wonder if that was okay to do.
Okay. No, there's no bad way. It's all these people watched Miami Vice like as an event at your place. That's fun.
I was converting more Miami Vice acolytes. It's true.
Yeah.
Yes. That's always.
This is what
positive.
We do. We get missionaries. We send them out. We convert them. We convert
door to door.
Did you get any new conversions?
Did I get any? They enjoyed it. I asked. I was like, so that was Miami Vice. What do you guys think? And they didn't realize like how silly it is at times. Like some of the lines are ridiculous. Oh, that's what I was noticing on this rewatch. Because I don't know, when I go to the theater, sometimes I have a hard time understanding the dialogue because I like to watch things with subtitles. So I feel like I missed some lines when I watched it theatrically. There were several lines that we like paused and had to rewatch again because we were just taken. Like when Colin Farrell says, well, my mommy and daddy know me.
Yeah, I know exactly.
My mommy and daddy love me.
I love that. I think I missed that when I watched it theatrically because I had no memory of it. And I was like, wait, this is one of the best lines in the movie to me.
That
was amazing. Hola,
like
chica.
You like the Allman Brothers?
Yeah, that also got a big reaction from the crowd. Leonard Skinner.
Every time the Allman Brothers happens to pop up in like a Spotify playlist, you're like, Allman Brothers?
Yeah.
Just have to.
Yes. Well, I think the thing is also about like the dialogue is quite dense and it just like if you're watching the theatrical cut, it just drops you in. You're like the boat race is good, I think, because it sets up the whole Neptune thing. Like,
yes.
Basically what's happening is that they're getting Neptune and then they get called off of that to go do the John Hawks scenario. But it starts in media res in the sense that like it just starts and you're like trying to catch up with it. There's all this lingo. And so you're not like the dialogue is so dense at times that you kind of don't get those really like moments to rest with my mommy and my daddy love me or my mommy and my daddy know me. It's Nomi, right?
Yeah, I bet they, it is Nomi, but I bet they love yeah. him too. If I was right, Sunny Crockett's right. mommy and daddy, yeah. I would love him deeply.
My mommy and my daddy know me. Yes. And yeah. and or like when he says, "You want to fuck my partner?"
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That's the same scene. Same scene.
Same scene. A lot of crazy dialogue in that scene. Yeah. especially with our bestie John Ortiz playing
yes,
Jose Yero.
Yes, on. Yes.
Yes, a disco guy. I mean, there's a lot we could keep going, but you know, it is that kind of mix of this like really sincere love story and then also the absurdity, and it's like a beautiful combo.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a beautiful combo, and I do understand why people were tonally confused when it came out, especially if you like loved the original show and then came into this. It would be confusing, but now I think that we can all appreciate it for what it is. I mean, obviously, there's a whole podcast about it. So.
it's also like the further we get away, the further you're divorced, and they can be separate things. And mm-hmm. I think that so there's like there was almost this like. Begging for like continuity of like, please, can we just have like Miami Vice as a movie and Michael Mann make it? And, you know, like, let's get Don Johnson back. Like that's what people were feeling, or they wanted the inverse of that, which is the absurd, which Katie and I have sort of tracked a few times on the show and talked about, which is like, this is at the time that, you know, the Dukes of Hazzard, Starsky and Hutch, Charlie's Angels, all around this period. So people are thinking, oh, they're just going to remake these 70s TV shows with, you know, as action comedies. And Michael Mann's like, no, you're going to think that, and you're going to give me a couple hundred million dollars to fly in cars from Italy. But we're not going to do that. We're going to make a really, you know, fantastic international crime thriller. And so I think, yeah, you just kind of get used to it. But the longer it goes on, the more that it can just pop up. And as you said, as soon as it pops up on a Netflix and there's like the depressing carousel of nothing that Netflix often has around. If you see a Miami Vice, you're like, oh, sick, easy. Like Collateral was on Australian Netflix for months and I watched it like six times. Every time I saw the poster, I was like, oh, that's done. There you go. That's right. Like, there's an hour 40. Thank you very much. You know, like right. Bang, like you're instantly grabbed because you're like, oh, the quality of this is not like, I don't know, the Cloverfield paradox. Like just going to Collateral, thank you very much. So you have that. But one thing I will say is Katie and I love in the director's cut the extension of the Trudy and Tubbs relationship, and we particularly love like one of our favorite lines in the whole film is in the director's cut, which is the exchange about the flowers and then the card, you know, salutations from your friends in the South. So for us, that's such a huge scene because, again, the threat of not Jose Yero, but Archangel De Jesus Montoya, that whole threat is so clear in the director's cut. So for us, like that's, you know, we have a Miami Nice cut, Mia, which we can share with you after the show, which is basically the bookends of the theatrical cut with the whole director's cut wedged in the middle. So that's our preferred version of the film.
Yes, that is actually the best version of the film because you get that theatrical opening, more of the Trudy stuff in the middle, and then the end.
And absolutely none of In the Air Tonight.
It is so, I know I've already said it, but like it changes the mood so much, especially because at first you're like, is this on the air tonight?
Yes.
Is that what this is? You can't like fully tell because it's a cover. And then
cover.
It's like a weird. Yeah. And then you realize that that's what it is. And it takes you out of the scene completely. But I also really enjoyed the experience of it. Like it, for some reason, it somehow still tonally makes sense to me. In a way that I can't really articulate. Like I can't explain myself. And I do think that it's stronger without that song playing, but I still am glad that it exists for some sick, twisted reason. And I was curious about the Miami Nice cut because I was on Letterboxd looking at the reviews and I noticed Katie kept posting about this fabled Miami Nice cut.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I know what it is now.
Yeah, we've done some online screenings. We probably will do another one, maybe, you know, early next year or something like that, or if we can
sort our lives out. It might happen again. We've done them online, Mia, because we get our entire Discord community and others to come in and join us. And we basically just, we have an open chat. And in a couple of them, we've had like a chat window where you can watch the screening live and the chat. And that chat window is one of the funniest. It's one of the funniest things I've ever experienced in my life. Like, I was just crying, laughing. And then just crying because we're all just getting so emotional and telling each other how much we love each other by the end of the movie. But we've done it a few times, and every time we've done it, Katie and I are just like, that was the best. We should do that more often.
It is so fun, and we should do it more often. It's just really hard with the time zones.
The time zones suck.
Oh, yes.
It's like late on a Saturday night is like right in the middle of a Sunday for me. So it's like, there is a risk of my children just walking into the office. So
yeah, and I would not call it a child-friendly film.
No.
When are you going to show your children Miami Vice, though? How old do they have to be?
That's a great question. So my daughter turns 8 in November. My son just turned 6. I snuck in while my family like hid in the back of the lounge room and watched Pulp Fiction when I was 9. That probably explains a lot. My kids will not watch that. I don't want them to have nightmares about like violence, because also gunshots and
head
violence.
Shooting.
Headshots.
Yeah, there's a lot of scary violence in that.
It's going to be later, probably, you know, 14, 15. That's a great 14, 15, great time, that time to sort of get into that, start getting into some of the Michael Mann. And we'll go slow. We'll go like Last of the Mohicans. That's probably going to be the first one.
Start with Mohicans.
And Dad, they're just having a really nice cuddle there. Yep, they sure are. They're having a great Cora Munro and Hawkeye just having a really passionate cuddle. That's what's happening. That was certainly my opinion of it at 12 when I saw Mohicans or whatever how old I was.
I feel like a lot of people saw Mohicans a little young.
Yeah.
I definitely did. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. It was that whole, it was the Dances with Wolves of it all, where you're like, I was like 6 or 7 and like the parents would just watch that movie. It was on for 3 hours and it's got some really brutal violence in it. And they're like, yeah, he saw Dances with Wolves. Let's just put on Mohicans and it won't hurt him. I definitely think that's a 14, 15. I'm going to keep it around that area, and then I'll start. Then the indoctrination.
Indoctrinating. Exactly. Yeah. We'll same thought.
We'll begin.
See, but this is the problem is like you can't, you have to, you know, because at that age also, like, what if they rebel? What if they're like, this is lame, Dad.
Scary.
It's okay. It's okay. So I've grown up, like I grew up as a kid, like loving, like the big example. This is where you just have to divorce yourself from it. And I know you can only talk about like kids stuff. It's like some things hit. I remember I showed my kids Ghostbusters. Mm. My son loves Ghostbusters now. He loves it. The first movie particularly loves it. Hates Batman. I love Batman. Batman, the animated series I'm trying to watch. Hates Batman. Can't stand it.
He's literally named after Batman.
He's literally named after Michael. He's named after Michael Keaton. My son's name is Keaton. Hates Batman, can't stand him. His favorite superhero is Spider-Man. So we watched Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Yeah. And he's like, he didn't even know Peter Parker existed. He's like, who's Peter Parker? It's Miles. Like, that's Spider-Man.
He's sort of coming
to learn. So now it's a Spider-Man. So you just have to go, it's his journey. Mm-hmm. He's going to find it. But then
He'll come around to Batman.
One day I'll be sitting in the office. In my office, and some movie will be on, and he'll go, "What's this?" And I've got him. Then there's a library of physical media, and he's done. He's done.
Son, I'm ready for you.
Look, we have a journey. There's the Criterion shelf. There's the imprint shelf. There's the umbrella special edition of the Super Mario Brothers. Let's go.
Right.
Yeah.
That will really rewire their brain because I saw that one way too young. But Mia, one thing about your interview that I really liked and listening to Mann talk about all this stuff is like, obviously, you know, he's talking about some war movies and politics and Hegel and all this stuff. But a lot of what he was talking about was about like relationship movies and movies that had like he was talking about the 1950s post-war movies and how they were relationships that had psychological realism. And I, you know, I'm always talking about his relationship, his relationships in the films that he makes and how great I think they are. But that was an interesting point. I feel like, you know, and when you were prepping for the interview and like watching these films, I assume you had to like watch most of the films on his list.
Yes. I had like a week to watch like 20 films, basically.
My gosh.
It was a lot. It was a lot of cramming and like begging my friends like, hey, do you want to watch Out of the Past tonight? I did watch them, and I'm really glad I watched them. I loved Out of the Past, and I also really enjoyed From Here to Eternity because of what he was saying, those like very complicated relationships of that post-war time period. And personally, like what I'm just more interested in the relationship aspects of films than the action and war type stuff, as evidenced by how the Colin Farrell Gong Li stuff sticks out in my head the most. So that was kind of part of why I was like shifting the interview towards kind of those complicated interpersonal relationships, because I don't think he gets enough credit, I guess, for those. Like, like Thief, for example, like that relationship is just incredible and very complicated. And it's just something I really appreciate and I feel is undervalued.
Yeah, I was glad you like brought that out in the interview. And he really seemed like he wants to talk about that stuff too. Like even when he's talking about Ferrari, he's always talking about the Enzo Laura dynamic and like
human drama. I think he refuses the... So many people are like, oh, Heat's one of the great action movies. He's an action film director. And he kind of hates how, I guess he sees that as a very dismissive term. He's like, no, I make human dramas. Some of them are more action orientated, but I make human drama. Some of them are period films, whatever. And so for him, the core of every film is the relationships. And I think that you just having that angle is just perfect, because it's like a great platform to him to finally actually talk about a lot of his films and approach them in a lot of a different way than I think some of the other interviews are, which is so hard. It's hard to, when you're talking to like an octogenarian filmmaker who's, you know, been around for so long, to like get new stuff, which was such a credit to you. And yeah, your cramming was evident. And I would just say this, like a little bit of behind the scenes is like, for those of us, Katie and I are lucky enough to have talked to Michael before, you've talked to him now. It's like, when you prep for a big interview with Michael, like you have to share all the things, the ideas, maybe the direct questions, the topics that you're going to cover, and have them in a lot of detail so that he can then pore over them and be prepared too. Because as you would expect, he's the most prepared director in Hollywood.
Yes.
And he's ready. He's game for the interview and he's ready to be prepared. The cutest thing, and I just laugh, maybe it's because I'm just such a man psycho, but every time Mia turns a card in her interview to get to the next question, Michael also turns a card because he's ready.
With
his prepared sort of series of things that he wants to cover. So it's just like, man, this guy is prepared, and Mia's had to be on her game here. So I was very impressed. Yeah, it was
great.
Oh
yeah, it was definitely the biggest challenge of my career so far. And also like I got there and I had, you know, I had all my cards printed out, and then like his assistant is handing him cards with my questions printed on them already. I was like, oh, I didn't realize these were like shared with him in this way. Like I was
saying some funny
stuff, and part of it was I just didn't know his sense of humor, and I have a strong sense of humor. I'm kind of silly and full of whimsy, and I don't really think of him as silly and full of whimsy, even though he does have that side. He's very multifaceted. But
my favorite part of any Michael Mann interview,
in there that I was like, don't read those.
my favorite part of Michael Mann interview ever was when he just teased me relentlessly in my interview, Katie and I's interview with him for Ferrari. He was just like, look, Katie, you're a very complicated person. I'm a complicated person. Blake, he's simple, but we are complicated people. And I just like started laughing, and I could see how much joy it brought to him to bust my chops on the interview. I was like, that's my favorite filmmaker likes me enough to take the Mickey out of me in the middle of this interview, and we're all having a good time. But yeah, he's very fun. This is the hardest challenge though in your interview of all, is watching it, pausing it, and trying to find physical media copies of everything on that list
of Michael Mann's movies that you don't have. You're like, oh shit, where is this? Oh, it's on DVD on eBay for like $90. Oh, I don't know if I can buy that. Next, go to the next question. Pause. All right, where is that? Okay, well, it's on Apple. I don't really want that as a digital. I want a physical. Okay, where is a Criterion? Oh, it's out of print. Oh, son of a bitch, back to eBay. So I just want to say that I did have...
You're like, it took me 4 hours to watch the interview.
I watched the clean through, just enjoyed the interview. But the second time around, I think I literally took like an extra 40 minutes of pausing and searching for physical media copies of everything.
Are you going to get Turbo?
I was going to say.
Oh, are you going to ask?
We've got Turbo. We've got Turbo.
Oh, you've already
at least
you've
with already the, got like turbo. There's a I've got there's like, you know, like for us, like an old what you'd usually have in your car for like CDs back in the day before you had like your phone in the car, you had a CD player. I've got like a disc bag of those with like a bunch of kids movies for my kids. So like if we travel anywhere, I'm like usually I'm the dad who like always packs the Blu-ray player just in case, because I don't know what you know, we'll have a TV at the place, but I don't know if
yes.
I have a Blu-ray player.
Yes.
So I bring that bag of movies. So the kids always have movies, and then I always slot a few in there for me. But there is one, and Turbo is in there. So
that's amazing. But just like going off of Turbo, I just have to say I enjoy. I think people think of him as such a serious like action guy, and I think it's actually very good to do these interviews with, first of all, women, and
yes.
second
yes.
of all, people who do want to like have a sense of whimsy or like talk about something other than action and male heroism or anti-heroism. And like, you know, like I did a Q&A with him for Collateral, and I was just like, I actually think it is important to like, you know, not just have only men interviewing yeah. him,
yes.
That, mm-hmm. that like we can talk about these other elements and bring out these other elements. And I thought you had a great rapport with him. I was so impressed with how sort of like comfortable and fun you were, in the interview. I think it made it really fun to watch. But also it was a very serious conversation, and he's talking about all of these things, and it was clear that you knew your stuff as well. So, yeah, you were definitely very prepared. It was really, really good. But I do think it is like, it's nice to have a different tone, you know?
Yes. Yes, I agree. It was really like walking a tightrope of like having fun, but also like, I'm taking this very seriously. He's like one of our greatest living filmmakers, you know? So it was really a tightrope of like fun, levity, and then also like, I do want to know like your serious thoughts about all like Battleship Potemkin. And
that was another thing I loved in the interview, was you were talking about Passion of Joan of Arc and then also yes. his close-ups. And I always think about his close-ups, his weird close-ups that are where they're all like on the side. So I love
yes.
that came up as a topic as well. And also to talk about these sort of unexpected influences.
It's, yeah, and then like Poor Things also. I was like, wait, you loved Poor Things?
I know.
Yes. Listening to him talk about Poor Things, because I see the Poor Things poster on your wall.
Yes, it's
that
true.
I was like, yes. Oh, I didn't know I needed to hear Michael Mann talk about Poor Things, but I did. And I got it.
Yes.
We'll be back after this quick break.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But just even stuff like, I love that he loves Beautiful by Inarritu. I'm like, that's not the choice that like 95% of people make in his whole filmography. And he's like, that's my favorite. And so hearing him like unpack that, I mean, Pans is, you know, like Guillermo Strong, you know, like they all call him Uncle Mike, you know, so he loves that. And he loves those guys. So it's no surprise to me. But then on Sandy, I was like, oh, you know, there's always lots of people talking about like around the time Sicario came out, they're like, oh, this feels very Michael Mann-y, you know, like it's got a lot of Michael Mann vibes. And it's like, knowing that he's a fan and that he called Denis Villeneuve when that was happening and like, you're going to be great and this is a great film. That's, that was such a nice tidbit because I think people think of him as this like, you know, very ego director, not going to be like a generous mentor. And I think that whole myth busting of that aura of his is sort of going, it's going with the archives. It's going with things like your interview, people like him ringing people and going like, I admire your work and imagine how much that would mean to a young filmmaker going like, Michael Mann's on the phone. Shut up. Tell my friends to stop pranking me. This is stupid. You know, but it's him. It's amazing.
He's watching everything, though. I mean, I think it's great that he's so on top of watching stuff while also still going back to the 1950s films, while going back to these, you know, films that he's loved in the past. So it was so fun to talk about his influences, and he's just so smart about we know this, but it's just like his literary references, his philosophical references, his political references, like it's very deep thinking about what's going on here.
Yeah,
he even related Poor Things to Dr. Strangelove.
Yes.
Like, oh my god.
He has such a great sociopolitical eye, and he looks at things and goes, I know what makes up the sociopolitical view. It's like, obviously the sociology, it's cultural, it's political, it's economic. And then he like hyper aware of like things like the context, like international. That's why he like likes to talk about trade and things like that. He's like, there's economic factors that influence cultural norms. And so he loves playing with that. So it's really interesting.
Mia, during your interview, did you have any like favorite moments or like anything that surprised you when you were talking to him?
Ooh, let's see. Cause it's like, I mean, I'm sure you also feel this way when doing interviews, but sometimes you just like leave your body and you don't like fully remember what's going on.
Oh, totally. I'm always trying to think of the next question.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
So then I'm not always present in the moment, but like I do try to be like, we're having a conversation and we're connecting.
But do you catch yourself sometimes doing that? And then you go, oh no, it's almost like someone goes, knocks on the door that's inside your head and goes, Blake, go back. That was good. Listen.
What they say. Yes. Cause you need to be like present, but also thinking ahead.
Yes.
It's,
listen yes, to
it's
what
it's very
answer.
Hard. It's very, very it's hard. Yeah, it so, is but, a skill.
On camera. I know, and on camera.
Knows so it's
all
like,
your questions.
I know, it was so much at once. And yeah, and it was like 2 hours long. Yeah.
Must have been exhausting.
No, it was because you're like focusing all of your brain power at once. But I think, I mean, we already kind of talked about this, but that Manhunter tidbit was crazy. He was like, oh yeah, I made friends with a serial killer. That's a whole thing. And it's like, you're friends with a serial killer? He was like, he just said it so casually. And then he was like, yeah, and I was inspired by him rather than like actually like the book, like Dollar Hyde. And that was a huge insight for me. So that moment, and then also, not to bring it back to Turbo again, but the whole conversation about like his sense of humor and comedy and everything, when I asked him like, so Michael Mann, what makes you laugh? Like what performers and which movies make you laugh? Like I was kind of nervous asking that question, but it was the question that I was extremely curious about, because again, like his movies are pretty serious, but as we discussed, he does have a sense of humor because he's a person, you know? Yeah. So I really liked hearing about the comedy he liked. Like he mentioned Robin Williams and Jonathan Winters and that movie The Loved One, which I haven't seen and is on my watch list now. Those were kind of my highlights.
Yeah. Oh, I want to see that movie The Loved One too. I haven't seen it. And it looks amazing. Yeah. Good looking out for us with those wrecks, Michael Mann.
Thank you, Michael Mann.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael Mann.
Oh, another thing that was really special is like his daughter was there the whole time. Yeah. Like,
oh, cool.
She's really great. He has like four daughters. Mm-hmm. So he.
And she's the champion of the archives.
Yes, exactly. Like she's really preserving her father's legacy in a way that I find very admirable. Like I'm very grateful for her. So shout out Michael Mann's daughter, Becca. We love you, Becca. But that was just really cool to see that like his family is involved with this stuff in that on that level. That's another fun fact.
Yeah, he's such a family man. He's he's a wife guy and a girl dad.
Yes, he is.
and his wife for so many years has been a major influence. His wife Summer has been such a major influence on his music choice. Like she got him the Gale, which for Mohicans, like she suggested that she suggested that song. Like so, there's like that's I guess the most famous one. But it's like her musical taste has helped him because he's back in the day in his offices, I don't know if it's the case now in Forward Pass with digital, but back in the day he had like a wall of CDs of different kinds of genres of music, all the different artists, and would do that. But Summer gave him the Gale. It's like, oh, I think this is a track for Mohicans. I think this is the one. And it obviously, I mean, it was the best choice ever. It basically defined that Oscar winning soundtrack. So yeah, it's really special. It's he's a family guy. It's great.
Yeah, a family guy.
Can you imagine going to Michael Mann's house to date his daughter? No, thanks.
Oh my god.
Thank you.
No.
But I do love that they are involved in archive and in preserving his work. And I just think it's like such a cool thing that they're doing with this. Mm. And because he does have so much material and like, I don't know, it is that I hate to be like, well, at the end of your life, because he is a spry guy. Heat 2, Let's Go, and he's going to be around for a while. But but it is this kind of looking back on your career at this moment in your life and taking stock and making sure that it's like in the right shape. It's like, you know, just instead of just going through all the boxes at the end, it's like, no, like, let's make this something that it can be now and like make it accessible to people. I think that's really cool.
I was digging around in those archives, the Ferrari archives, because there was like that whole annotated script and the character top sheet. I loved the character top sheets that like psychologically analyzing Enzo and Laura's relationship. I those were my favorite parts of digging around in there.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
I had my favorite part of the archives is him talking to actors. And that was part of your interview as well, is like how to work with an actor, like, you know, watching a director talk to an actor after an okay scene, and then it's like a light years better after that conversation, and going, I have to learn how to do that. Like, that was so wonderful in your interview. And I think that happens in the Ferrari archives too, is just like talking to Penelope Cruz about wearing heavy weighted shoes so that Laura doesn't walk like Penelope. Like, just that tiny detail. I'm like, oh, that's just genius. It's a very practical human thing. It has a whole bunch of psychological backing, but it's also like, I want you to get to a place, but I can help you get there just with some tiny adjustment in your wardrobe. Like, it's really cool. Like, you can change, you can really affect the performance that way. And he's so smart to think of things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's an actor's director in a way totally. You wouldn't really expect.
Yes.
Yeah, I have to bring up The Insider. I love The Insider. Oh, I actually have a question for y'all. So The Insider is probably my favorite of the Michael Mann movies I've watched, even though I think that, you know, Heat is,
it's Heat. Yeah.
But I love The Insider. So I'm curious, besides Miami Vice, of course, what are your favorite Mann films? And sorry if you've already answered this before.
No.
Mine's Collateral.
Nice.
Mine's Collateral, but... I also probably Manhunter.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Manhunter is just so fun. William Peterson being hot.
Brian Cox.
Shorts.
Purple shorts.
Yeah.
Purple shorts.
It's also
that I found on Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go on.
Sorry.
Katie got distracted with the shorts. I know how to derail her, and I will derail an interview just because Katie Walsh brings me so much joy, making her laugh. And when I watch her get embarrassed, it's very fun.
Oh God, I'm bright red. No, I think the Manhunter relationship is one of my favorite relationships. The marriage where
Molly and Will,
I just really like that dynamic. But yeah, now Blake, you go.
For me, it's really hard because I would say we've done Last of the Mohicans. We've done, you know, we've had a couple of special episodes on Thief. Miami Nice is like a modern man campfire where we've talked about, obviously Miami Vice is the focus, but lots of Collateral Confessions because it's Katie's favorite and I love talking Collateral with Katie. Lots of Ferrari. Lots of Black Hat. We've had different conversations about that. But I truly, and as sacrosanct as it is, because Heat is my favorite movie of all time, when I watch The Insider, when I'm watching it, it's one of the best movies I've ever seen. And on its day, if I'm in the mood, it's better than any movie that exists, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, that's right.
So for me, The Insider... is so close to Heat for me. It's like Heat is unparalleled. And then, but like when The Insider comes on, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, The Insider. I did not recognize your game. You know what I mean? Like just, you know.
I think a lot of people don't recognize The Insider's game.
Yeah. So it's and so many people have asked, and I just want to shout out Chris Tapley because he often harasses me. People are like, when are you doing The Insider on one of these podcasts? And I'm like, listen, The main reason I didn't do The Insider or haven't done it yet is because I wanted to do The Insider and people just assumed that I might do it after Heat. And I was like, I want to do a journalism movie. So I did the best journalism movie that exists, which is All the President's Men. So then,
yes.
So then it was like,
I love that one.
So then once you do that, it's like, we did talk a lot about The Insider. So it might come around, but yeah. So then after that, it's so hard because honestly in that next tier, so for me, it's like Heat, The Insider. And in that next tier is Manhunter, Miami Vice, Collateral, Thief. Basically Mohicans.
Like you're all of them.
It's like, the next tier is nearly a car crash. And then underneath is like there's a couple under there where it's like...
Like Public Enemy, Public Black Enemy. Hat.
Yeah, there's, yeah, you sort of get some of those that are like in that lower tier. But like that next, if you talk about like a 4.5, like I almost think that like Heat and The Insider are like my 6 stars. They're just like up there. And then the rest are 5, almost 5s or 4.5s for all of the rest. And then there's a few that are like 3.5s. But, you know, that's... And The Keep, you know, like much love to The Keep. Yeah. Unless... but yeah, so the rest of it's really terribly hard. But I would just say I've been recording the Minhunter series, which Katie's going to be a part of, which is Unpacking Manhunter. So as we've been going through, increasingly the guests and I are sharing the opinion that Michael Mann was in full God mode at in 86 and no one even knew what was going on.
No one
could possibly comprehend what was happening because that's how God mode he was in 86. So Manhunter is definitely like shaking the tree to demand that it is like one of his best. And I can't argue with it right now.
Manhunter feels really different from a lot of his other films, just stylistically, even though I think it's dealing with all the same themes and obsession and being driven by your work and being torn between your private life and your professional life. But then it also like, but stylistically it just, I'm like, what is happening?
No, Manhunter and Miami Vice, you could just play back to back and it would just make all the sense in the world. You'd be like, oh, this makes sense. Like all the decades in between. It's like, oh, this is the same guy for sure. Like the same type of stuff. Yeah. It's special, yeah. And I've recorded now 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 episodes of that series already. So it's as we're talking, 8 episodes recorded. And for our patrons, I'll say it here because folks might be listening. I'm going to drop the second episode as a video episode where you can watch along as Bill Gabeary and I unpack the opening scene on the beach in a couple of hours. So that goes for about 1 hour and 40 minutes. It has one of my favorite lines from Bill Gabeary ever on a podcast,
which he
goes, "If you don't like this shot, you're an asshole."
So, he would say that.
That's a
and
very
the way Michael Mann films water and beaches.
Yeah.
And all of that. Like sorry to James Cameron, but Michael Mann is the king of water. Sorry.
Michael Mann is the king of water. Title of ep.
Yeah.
Got it.
King of water.
My
God. That was so funny.
Yeah, that was great. But yeah, so no, I definitely agree with you. The Insider is so, that's the kind of frustrating thing where you see, and I guess you think about it, like we think about it when Oscar punditry ever comes around, there's certain years where movies are so good and you see that like 2 or 3 movies that are best picture could win for the next 5 years in a row. Like I always think about that with that kind of like the There Will Be Blood, Zodiac, No Country for Old Men argument. It's like there were 3 or 4 years after that where all the best pictures, none of them were as good as the one that lost in that year. I'm just There Will Be Blood or No Country would beat every one of those films for the next few years. And I genuinely think that about 99, like when The Insider got his biggest Academy recognition to date at that time, I'm like, The Insider wins in most years. Like you put it up in the 98, it smashes everything. You know what I mean? It's just like with the right campaign behind it, it's like that smashes every time. It's like, is Spotlight better than The Insider? I'm really, you know, all love to my Spotlight hive out there. No, it's not. It's really not. Good movie. Rewatch it.
Yes.
But not The Insider. Like who's I did speak to William Goldenberg, who's the Academy Award winning editor of Heat and Miami Vice and The Insider, and his favorite is The Insider.
Oh.
Yes. Validation.
He goes, I think that that's Michael's best work. He goes, this is some of the best work I've ever seen, which is, I mean, for him, he's worked with everyone.
I recently found out that the film critics group I'm in, the LA Film Critics Association, that is the Michael Mann movie we have given the most awards to. We gave a whole heap of awards to The Insider. So we were on it back in the
day. Thank you for doing the work.
Yeah,
I was not there. I was in high school.
But they just had a lay-by. They had a little layaway spot for Katie Walsh.
But they did give him a lot of awards, which I think is very cool that they recognized him on that level. Mia, I want to know, what is your Miami Vice double feature? If you're going to show this again to your friends and maybe show a themed double, this is put your programmer hat on. We're putting
something
you on
really
the spot.
Something really silly came into my head. So first I'm going to say something that's kind of a joke. I kept thinking about the Apple TV Plus series Sugar.
Yes, you're a sugar head.
You are.
I'm sugar pill, baby.
Almost another title of ep. I'm sugar pilled, baby.
I'm sugar pilled. I kept thinking about it because I was like, that's John Sugar at Sonny Crockett. So like put on the sugar pilot. I don't know. No. Don't actually. Oh, but also
that's a
actually,
great idea. Actually. No, I like
he's a
this.
Detective. Like he's a detective again. Yeah. Colin is. Okay. But my, it's tricky because like, this isn't really my genre. Well, not that it is a genre. It's human drama, as Michael Mann would say. So I'm trying to think of an answer that's not sugar.
We like sugar.
I like
it. We'll accept it.
I'll accept it. I like it. I really like annoying your friends with something stupid like that sugar.
Yeah.
Like just in the middle of the movie and they're like, shut up, Mia.
I'm like pointing like that's John Sugar. Just so you guys know, like that is John Sugar, the detective. He's here to keep Hollywood safe.
That's good. That's a good answer.
Okay. Thank you. I really wish I could come up with something else.
The Emmys campaign, they need to play the Sugar pilot and Miami Vice double feature for 100%. The Emmys campaign.
Please do it. Yeah, and the pilot, you know, it's not too long. I believe it's only 40 minutes or so. Like that's, and Miami Vice is long, so that might be nice
to
like have a quick thing. The other thing I'm thinking about is The Birdcage.
Wow.
No, literally only because it's in Florida. That's the only reason.
I really like Florida.
And I think of The Birdcage.
Chest hair.
Florida.
Chest hair galore. Yeah.
Chest hair. Mm-hmm. Mustaches.
Mustaches.
Yes.
Good mustaches, too. Very good.
Right. Yeah. All things we like.
Let's just say Sugar and The Birdcage. Okay. You know,
I think those
that's
are
a normal choice, right?
The triple
perfect
feature.
Answers.
No one has ever programmed ever.
No.
Except for Mia, which is the best.
That's the Mia special.
Yeah. That's what we like.
I have a nerdy Letterboxd question, and I know you guys might see this, but I'd love to, Katie, I'd love to see like now that Letterboxd is becoming so much more ubiquitous in sort of social media, I'd love to see how many more people are watching. Like, I'd love if you had a stat of like what directors are being watched the most and like, and like maybe like one of your cool like Letterboxd infographics about what directors are being watched the most and like who's jumped the most, like who's gone from say, I don't know, like I'm making up silly numbers here. Cause you know, every time something hits 1 million views, that's a really significant a milestone, but it's like who went from 1 million views to 2 million, like who doubled their watches. And I genuinely think people like Michael Mann are those guys. Like there could be, you know, in the last, or you know, if you tracked it over a few years, like in the last couple of years, Michael Mann has gone from X amount of views to, you know, millions. Like he's gone up 500%. I'd really be interested, like from a nerdy data perspective, because when you see like people log stuff like that, it's like it really fascinates me, about how people are consuming it. Just like, am I going insane? And then like you say, oh, a new million views, and you're like, oh wow, so a million people logged that, that's awesome, you know. So yeah, I wonder if that would ever happen. So that's just an idea. You don't have to have an answer for that.
There is like a backstage data thing that you can see for each film if you are a crew member. If you have a crew account, you can see the backstage data. So I could see like how Miami Vice has spiked, for instance.
Oh, great.
I can only do it with like
a film,
like singular films, like not a director's work. I mean, we have data people who can. I'm just
that's not my field. Could you have a look and see how Miami Vice has spiked for us? Oh my god,
I could look. I can do this favor I would love for that. The Miami Nice crew.
Oh, I would love that. Yeah,
Blake, because, calling in some hackers to get into the back
just,
end.
You know, just sometimes with data is boring. It's like it's boring for a lot of folks. It's like, oh,
no,
you
but
know
it's
that.
Great.
But some of that stuff, like especially like Letterboxd, I'm like, that's cool as shit. Like people really tried to watch this thing and gave it a chance. And that's usually where the Letterboxd community is like, nope. You're like, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people really tried though. Yeah. People tried and they logged it and they did their best.
I love the data on Letterboxd. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just gonna say, big fan of stats.
Love the stats.
Yes. Oh, I love the stats. And then we also, I like to track kind of we call them high risers. Like, for example, like Josie and the Pussycats and Mamma Mia were like, when they were first on the site, they had really low scores. But then like as more people joined, especially, you know, like more women.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
those ratings went up. Like Mamma Mia is at like a 3.7 now. And it used to be like below a 3.0. And I would be curious as to see like how Miami Vice's rating has shifted over the years as it's found more of an audience and more people understand what it is.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yes. That sounds like the kind of nerdy data science that I'm into. You know what I'm saying? I just want to say I want to see what were the ratings. It's like when you look at
how have the ratings changed from 2020 on.
Yeah exactly. Exactly.
I can find this out for you, everybody. We'll connect.
Yes.
And the views. Okay. And the views. That's good. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
Mia, it's been such a treat talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. This has been super fun. Thank you for naming your own episode with one of the hottest King of Water takes I could have possibly ever hoped for. You're just a delight. And thank you for your great work and for shouting us out, because it means the world to us. So yeah, just thank you so much.
Thank you again for having me. And I can't believe we've got to the end of the episode and nobody has said I'm a fiend for mojitos. We haven't talked about that.
No.
Like,
we talked about the silly lines. But
we didn't even talk about like the mojito fiend thing. And I think that's honestly kind of incredible. Like, there's so much to talk about. We didn't even have to go for the low-hanging fruit.
True. Listen, we can if you happen to be free on the 24th of August at 7:30 at the Egyptian.
At 7.
Seven. I'm in another time zone, guys. Listen to Katie. 7 p.m., 24 August at the Egyptian Theater in Los Angeles, and you want to see a 35mm theatrical print of Miami Vice, you can be assured that I will be at least two mojitos deep by the time you see me.
Yes. You will be sozzled in mojitos.
Yeah. You can go to the Taco Bell Cantina across the street. That's a hot tip.
Oh, the Taco Bell Cantina. Yes, I forgot that that's there.
Yes, it's happy hour all day. You can get a $5 margarita at any time. Like, for real. You get strawberry margaritas for $5. So I don't know what the mojito price is. I don't know what the mojito price is. But I'm just saying.
A strawberry mug is only $5. That's a bargain.
That is a good bargain. Mia, thank you. I love you. We love you. Thank you for coming here and just being the delightful person that you are and sharing all of your behind the scenes stuff about interviewing Michael Mann. That's such a treat.
Oh, right back at y'all. Love you, Miami Nice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mia.
And we'll talk soon.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.